All right, continuing on the celebration of 5 years of Xbox Live, I have Paul Bunyan is his gamer tag. Ben Kilgore is his name, and Ben's here. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Larry. How's it going?
I've had you on the show before, like
2 years ago, at the launch of Xbox 360.
When I started doing podcasts, last time you had me on, and now we get where you're back.
And I'm back
because you were one of the key, leading up to the fifth anniversary of Live, which is this Thursday. I have four special guests, and you're one of my special guests because you've been around Xbox Live since launch.
Yes.
Right?
I joined the team a couple weeks before we actually launched. I was like the first product unit manager of Xbox Live. And so I've been here since literally the day that we launched the service.
Since you turned it on and people started flooding in. What was it like? You know, I talked to Scott Henson earlier in the week about, you know, the early days. But you were, you know, he was out talking to publishers. You were here building the bits and pieces.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Because you didn't start with that many people.
No, the team was pretty small, and the hard part when you're building something like that is you have no idea what to expect in terms of how many customers are going to come and what scale to build for.
Right.
And I remember on launch night, we were having kind of a party in the cafeteria, and we're watching all the customers come online, and we're like playing with customers, and for the first time you could like really like talk to people while you're playing and all that. And we're just watching like our performance counters go up and up and up.
Right.
And the entire engineering team is kind of holding their breath to make sure that our servers hold and nothing breaks.
Right. Yeah, because E has talked that frequently, and he, you and I know E very well. And he probably was pretty nervous.
Yes, we were all very nervous.
it's been 5 years since the service came online. So what are some of the interesting things that you've seen over the past 5 years? I mean, we've gone from, you know, zero customers to millions of customers now. It's been interesting. We've gone from a handful of titles to literally, what, 300 or 400, 500 titles now. It's been a change.
The part of what Live has always been about was like the hallmark of trying to have consistency across all these games and things like voice in every game, the consistent friends list messaging and all that. And the neat part of you watch the evolution is if you think back to the earliest Xbox One Live games, they were consistent in the sense that they all had a friends list, but they all felt kind of different. They didn't all have very good lobbies. They didn't all like implement messaging very cleanly, things like that. And now when you fast forward to where we are today and you look at what we were able to do on 360 with the guide, it's like we really started to realize what that initial vision was 5 years ago of like it really feels like it's consistent and all games are better because of Live.
So actually this is an interesting point because you just talked about it. You came over to work on Live right before it launched, and you were one of the first people I had on my friends list. And do you remember the first game we played together? Because you were the very first person I played on Xbox Live with.
I don't.
Not as Major Nelson, as one of my other gamer tags.
Yeah, I can remember. I remember your other gamer tags.
Right.
If I was going to guess, I would have guessed we played Ghost Recon.
No, it was football.
Football.
Right. It was the first football game.
Fever?
Yep. Because remember, Fever came out and had an auto update, right?
Fever came out and it had an auto update.
Right.
And that was one of the first Live games.
And I believe because you and I had worked together in another part of Microsoft. I believe I was playing my Patriots, and you were playing your Vikings,
as you always
play. And then I promptly got schooled because I just completely fell apart. Because you had played a few games already.
You got schooled because I just have mad video game skills.
Right, but that goes without saying. But you were one of the first people I played with on Live, and then later on. You you're responsible for Major Nelson. That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, I was just curious if you've ever told people the way that I described the job to you when we were first defining the role.
I have, and if you feel like you need to do that again, you're more than welcome to.
Because it was a role that we didn't really completely understand in Microsoft. It was kind of a new role to have somebody that really went out and engaged with the community.
Right.
And the way that I described the job to you over 5 years ago.
Right, because when I saw the job, I came to talk to you, and you're like, well, this is what I'm looking for. And I remember this because we're sitting in your office. This was way back in right after launch, maybe. And we were playing, what were we playing? You were showing me Rainbow Six and the voice in Rainbow Six. That's what it was. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever, and I said, I got to come work on this team. But anyway, so
and the way I wasn't sure exactly how to think of the job.
Right.
It was, like I said, it was a new role that we've had here. And the image that I had in my mind was that I wanted to hire Julie McCoy from The Love Boat that could be that cruise director that really made sure that every single day all of our gamers and all of our customers were having a good time.
Right.
And that was like my initial model.
Your initial vision.
Right. And then when you showed up with the skirt and high heels.
Yeah, okay. Stop, stop. No photos are available of that.
That was a Halloween party, I guess.
Yes, that was. Or was it a crazy party at E's house?
Yeah, there you go.
One of E's parties. So, yeah, so you're responsible. So you brought me on to kind of keep in touch with the community. And the reason I remember you said this is because the service is moving so quickly. And there still are a lot of pieces that are moving quickly.
And it's a living, breathing thing. And the concern I had was from the engineering product side, we'd get focused on our next release, which was usually 6 months or 12 months down the road.
Right.
And I didn't want to lose sight of what happened every single day.
Yeah.
And every single day we had thousands and thousands of people that were logging in and were playing games. And we wanted to make sure that every single day people had great experiences.
And so my job really, that's where it started, was really taking a lot of the feedback and bring it back to you guys. Say, hey, you know what, guys? XYZ isn't working so well. Or how about, have you thought of this? Or so it's really been interesting.
Yeah. And a little bit of like canary in the coal mine.
Right. Exactly.
If there's ever a problem or we did something that the community didn't like, or if there's a system problem, you were the first one to usually
and still am.
Yeah.
So, because it's really because of the power of the community, because they come, they'll go up to the blog or they'll email me major@xbox.com, or they'll send me messages over live and they'll say, hey, this, you know, this isn't working or that isn't working. And I send it right over those guys. So that still happens today.
Yeah.
But going back a little bit, you talked about the migration of, or the evolution from original Xbox, which, you know, the original Xbox shipped with a craziness back in 2001, shipped with an Ethernet port in the back, which when like no one had Ethernet or broadband at that point.
Yep.
So you were brought on to say, hey, that Ethernet port, you need to make that happen.
How do we take advantage of that Ethernet port?
Yeah.
And it's funny because at the time, people wouldn't believe the huge internal debate we had if we could go 100% Ethernet or if we really needed to support dial-up modems. Because back then,
we're
still like at that point when the tide was just starting to turn to everybody having broadband.
Right.
And there's plenty of internal people that thought we were crazy to say that we weren't going to support dial-up modems and that this was a broadband-only product.
And look, well, obviously in hindsight.
In hindsight, it was a great decision.
Clearly it was the right decision. One of the questions I get a lot of times when I go out in the public is, hey, when are we going to have a friends list over 100 people? And you're the man who kind of – you capped it, didn't you? I think it's you.
I didn't. Well, so the history, so everybody understands,
right,
is it's harder than it might seem just to say let's increase the friends list from 100
Let's add another 50 or 100, right.
And the reason is because of all those Xbox One games.
Right.
Because in Xbox One, the friends list is basically hard-coded into each of the individual games.
Right.
And so if we were to increase the size of the friends list, we'd have to figure out how do you only send down 100 friends to
Xbox
One
games,
and which ones do you pick.
Right.
So it's a little bit more complicated than just changing the size of a list somewhere.
Yeah, it's not going into any file and changing max friends equals 200.
Exactly.
So, well, I'm still holding you responsible, though.
You should, because, you know, you have the problem. A lot of people have the problem. I have the problem
as
well.
Right. But as I've said before, the majority of our users have like 23 or 24 friends.
The average is right in the low 20s.
Right. And exactly. So people can go, you know, internally we can go in and they do their little SQL query and it comes back and says, ding, you know, 24.2 friends or whatever the median is. One of the other elements was messaging. And we've seen messaging evolve from the original Xbox, which was friend invites. And then there was voice and text. That must have been,
because the big innovation was we started with friends invites.
Right.
And then we quickly discovered that one of the things I was challenging was you wanted to like schedule with people and arrange when you're going to play.
Right.
So then we added, and I think it was in the Aftershock release, which was the first update of Live.
So we had them all codenamed.
We all had codenames for them.
Right.
We had the launch, then we had Aftershock, which was in the fall of 2003.
Right.
And one of the features we added to that was the voice messages. so that you could send a message to someone. Was that AfterShock or was that Tsunami?
Well, Tsunami, because I was testing that. Because I came in right before that.
So AfterShock, the feature we added was stats with attachments, which used some of the similar underlying technology.
Right.
And that feature was a feature we added for
stats with attachments.
That's what we call it internally. Now, I don't think we ever externally called it that.
Right.
The feature that customers saw was when they played Project Gotham Racing 2, and they saw their ghost races that were attached to leaderboard entries.
Got it.
That's what stats with
attachments. With attachments. Okay. All right. So anyway, so then you talked about the next release, which was AfterShock.
Yeah. So then after AfterShock, we had Tsunami.
Right.
Tsunami was really the Halo 2 release.
Right.
We shipped that in the spring. And we worked really closely with Bungie and on all the different things that they needed in order to pull off things like their party match system and all the other innovations that they had.
How about party match? This is what I want. I want party match for every game.
You know, there's been a lot of thought put into that.
Okay.
I think we all agree that we like to see something like that.
But we're moving forward, so I want to continue. Yeah. So let's go back to that release. So you had voice.
So we had voice. We had Tsunami was a lot of support for party match for Halo 2. We had to do a lot of kind of like server optimization work to support the new loads that we had.
So but I also want to be clear is that any game could do party match, right?
Any game could.
Right. But there's a lot of work that's involved.
And there's a handful of, there's actually probably more games than people, think that actually implement their own matchmaking system.
Okay.
Right. We enable that. But it's not easy to do. It's a lot of work.
Right.
And most of the games to date have decided to not do that.
But before we got to that release, so you were off in the secret room working on Xbox 360 stuff.
I started working on 360 probably 03,
which was Xenon.
We called it Xenon at the time.
Right.
Right. And in when we first started Xenon, the focus is a little bit like hardware, CPU, GPU.
Right.
And then starting to think about what are like the kind of defining signature experiences that we wanted to have.
Right.
We quickly knew that live was one of those experiences, and we used to think of it as like the first kind of truly live enabled console.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of stories from Xbox One that really helped define how we thought about live on 360. Probably the best one is the whole AMP 2 experience in XSN Sports.
Okay.
And people probably don't realize how much we played AMP 2 internally, and we had an XSN competition set up, and it was through that experience, and there was a bunch of folks. It was me and Jay and Scott Henson and a handful of other people are really defining a lot of the earliest features. And I made a mistake when I set it up. I thought I was creating like a 3-day competition, and I created a 30-day competition.
So for a month.
And so we ended up playing it for 30 days.
Right.
And that was probably like one of the best mistakes that I've made in my career, because it was from that the whole achievement system came out.
Right.
The gamer cards, gamer score.
Right.
All those features really came out of the experience we had where we competing on XSN. We were playing with our laptops next to us, constantly hitting F5 to see our scores get updated on this website.
Right.
And starting to think a lot about the dynamics of how you like to boast about what you did.
Right.
At one point in AM2, I took a picture of the screen when I finished the single player, and I sent it to Jay Allard.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to prove to him that I beat the game before he did.
Right.
And that was all the stuff we were thinking about as gamers.
Right.
It's like, you're proud when you do something great in a game.
Right.
You're proud when you beat it on hard difficulty, or whatever it might be. And we wanted to create that system where you could expose that, and you could expose it outside of the console besides just in the console. So a lot of the work that you helped drive on Xbox.com.
Right.
Right. And, you know, like the gamer cards and forums, I think, was like one of the big features that you really pushed hard on to make sure.
So when people came to the Xbox forums, they didn't have another username. They had their gamer tag and their gamer card right there.
And it's great because when you're on the forums and people are talking, you know instantly if they have any cred or not.
If they played the game, if they know what they're talking about.
It's not somebody from the competition site that's making fun of what
right.
we do, right?
Right. They're invested. So we talked about XSN. People would love to see that again. Explain XSN for some people that may not be aware of its history.
Yeah, I mean, it was a website.
Xbox Sports Network.
Xbox Sports Network. I forget all the games that they supported.
Links.
It was all the first party ones. Links. I think Fever, Amped. I think Rally Sport.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Was in it. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if there's any other ones or not. And for each of those games, they had a handful of different types of competitions or tournaments you could create.
Right.
And on the website, you could go up. That's where you created the tournament. So they had advantage of it was a little easier from a user interface perspective to set those things up. But then they'd post the stats up there. And you'd see your progression. You'd see who you play next. And they moved kind of a lot of the user experience out of just like the console.
Yep.
So like over lunch, you could check in just like you might if you're a fantasy football fan or whatever, and you go to your favorite website to do things like that. And so that was really the first time we started to think hard about extending the console experience outside of the console itself.
So it was the early vestiges
when you look at my Xbox today.
Yeah.
A lot of like the ideas for my Xbox came from that.
Uh-huh. So when you started playing for Xbox 360, you had the achievements and you just talked about all those things. But simultaneously you're working on other projects to get Xbox Live, for instance, we brought EA on.
Yes.
So you were in charge of that, right?
Well, I worked closely with those guys on bringing EA on to Live on Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
Was it E3-04? Is that
yes,
when we announced that?
Yep, right? E3-04.
We had Muhammad Ali on stage.
That's right.
And all of that. And that was a really
And our new boss,
time.
Don, was on stage at that point.
Don was on stage working for EA.
Don Metric, right?
Yeah. And there was a lot of work we had to do because to integrate into EA's back end and to let them use their matchmaking system, and they use a lot of like their tournaments features and other.
Yeah, one integration that works really well is we really tied tightly into their mail server because I get spammed with mail all the time.
Yes, like instantly. As soon as you like play an EA game, you get a mail.
It actually sends it to me when I drop it in, and I don't even boot it up, and it's just like ready to go.
Yeah,
God.
They're really good at that.
Wow. So tell us about, and then moving on, it kind of became, you know, you started just really heavy duty doing the planning for 360, and then we played some games on 360. What were some of the first games we played? I think it was, oh god, it was Hexic. We played the hell out of Hexic.
We played Hexic a lot. I think that was the very first game that came up.
Right.
We played lots of early builds of Perfect Dark Zero.
Which I liked.
The only problem with Perfect Dark Zero is that we played so many early builds of it.
Yeah, we got
by the time
out.
It shipped,
we
were all kind of done playing.
Yeah, we got burned out by that.
We saw some builds of Cameo.
Right.
That was a game that I recently just played Cameo again.
Oh, you did?
I was playing it with my kids, and I was just like reminded like kind of how fun and creative that game was.
Right.
It still looks really good.
Right.
The creativity in that game is still really
And that was one of the first games, like you said, that and PDZ and Hexic were some of the first games we got our achievements on.
Yeah.
Which, actually, I need to go take a look at this because I'm pretty sure I'm ahead of you in GamerScore. Not very rarely have I been ahead of you in GamerScore.
You are slightly ahead of me right now, although I've recently been playing a lot more. I've been turning through discs that have...
You just finished Portal.
Finished Portal.
Don't talk spoilers because you got in trouble for that.
Okay, I won't talk spoilers. I finished that. I've been playing PGR 4.
Yep.
Obviously, I've been playing Halo 3. I got a stack of discs I'm bringing home again.
Yeah, we're going to play some COD 4.
COD 4 is next on the list.
Right, because that COD 2 was a huge launch title for us.
I play Party Animals.
Oh, did you like that?
Yeah, I thought it was cute.
First game, you get like 80 score, 80 gamer score. It's just like hands it out to you like crazy. But
I've seen it too.
Oh, that's right, seen it. Yeah, I've been playing that. My wife is kicking my tail in that one, but it's a lot of fun. Getting back to Xbox Live and the birthday of the fifth anniversary of Live coming up or already here, depending upon when you're listening to this. What are some of the surprises that you've seen? Like 5 years ago when you were working on this, you're like, you know, you never thought it could come this far in this short of time or long a time.
Well, I think we definitely exceeded a lot of our expectations about how fast it would grow. We were the first. Kind of service to reach a million subscribers. We reached a million subscribers faster than HBO, Netflix. So when you look at subscription businesses, we grew really, really quickly.
Right.
And we grew on the strength of like the viral nature of the community and all that.
Right.
Gamers got it. It wasn't like we were marketing incredibly hard or anything.
Right.
The other part that kind of stands out was there was a lot of kind of early naysayers. Some of the early publishers didn't think things like voice and game would work. We had people tell us that, oh, you use too much CPU, we'll never be able to like make good games and still do voice. Or they tell us that people will be afraid to talk and it's not really that common, you know, popular of a feature.
I talked about this with Scott Henson. We talked about the fact that in the Xbox 360, there is no voice masking feature.
Exactly. Right. Because the voice masks were horrible. That was like probably the biggest mistake in hindsight we made on Xbox One Live.
Right.
Was the voice mask. But we had a legitimate concern. I remember the very first time I talked to people when you go into as a MotoGP lobby, I think it was my first live experience.
Right.
And it was a little intimidating at first because you don't know who these people are. And you're kind of like talking to strangers.
Right.
But people kind of quickly get over those kind of social barriers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely been an interesting time on that level. So it's gone. Where do you, you know, let's turn it around. Where do you think it's going to go in the next 5 years?
Well, it's only going to keep growing.
Right.
Right. And I think it's where,
maybe you get 110 people on your friends list.
I'm thinking like 108, 109, we might be able to pull off. 110 might just break our servers.
I'll tell you that.
I think you're going to see that one of the things we know we need to do a better job of is create experiences for a broader set of gamers.
Right.
We've done a great job with hardcore gamers and the you know, I could call it the Rocket Launcher Master Chief crowd.
is that what you call it?
You know.
Or the sniping crowd.
And the sniping crowd and all that. And when you look at games, like, we have a lot of, like, you know, more broadening content like Uno and whatnot, but it's still kind of the hardcore traditional gamer that's playing those games versus really, like, families and all that. So that's an area that we look at a lot. There's no shortage of, like, social experiences that we wanna like, keep pushing on. The list of, like, ideas around community and integration with different things that are going on the internet just doesn't stop.
Yeah, I've always talked about the fact that I know that between you and I and E and the rest, even everybody on the live team, there's a list of like 50 or 60 features that we want to add in that it's just, sometimes you just can't, you don't have time.
You don't have time to do everything, and it's hard when you're building a worldwide service that supports, you know,
millions and millions of
customers, so the surface area is huge. And just every time you do an update, it's just really hard to do that. And we're getting better and better at managing some of those things. But you can never do it as quickly as people would like you to be able to.
Especially with this crowd, our audience is very vocal and they're voracious.
They are, which is what we like.
Right, right? We do love that.
When I first started working on Xbox Live, and I remember I talked to other people in the company, they asked me what I liked about what I did, and I was like, part of what I love is I can talk to my customer.
Every day.
And they went totally getting it. I'm like, I'll show you. And I turn it on. I turn on my console in my office and I put on my headset.
Right.
And I'd start playing a game. And we could talk to customers and you see what they liked and what they didn't like. And that really helped us with a lot of some of the early stuff we did. And there's so much of that, those experiences and feedback that helped us shape what we did on 360.
So a lot of people that are listening to this and maybe, had the feedback from the community really did set the stage for the Xbox 360.
Completely. And because everything we did because we're gamers ourselves and we played with like that community. We interacted with those people.
Right.
We are part of the community too.
Right.
And it was those kind of shared experiences we all had is what drove so much of everything.
Yeah, we knew that we needed to have photo messaging and voice messaging in game or just to have that at this dashboard. I remember that when you first showed the Xbox 360 prototype Flash, we had a Flash interface. You remember that?
Yep.
And you showed that. And I remember when people would see that internally, and unfortunately it's nothing I can share externally, but people were just, they got it.
So we had notifications, and we showed like the private chat, one-on-one chat, with that. We use that a lot when we talk to developer partners, like game studios and stuff.
Right.
Obviously, for 360, a big part of what we were doing was making it easier to create games for live.
Yeah, we basically took a lot of the heavy lifting away from gamers.
Exactly. We moved it into the guide, so they didn't have to worry about messaging, they didn't have to worry about friends lists, they didn't have to worry about a bunch of that stuff.
Right.
And so we built that prototype that we took on the road and we used internally to help people understand. And like, because when we first started talking about a guide in the guide button, like, people didn't really understand what we meant.
Right.
And there was a handful of us, and I was one of the people that actually had a fight to get the 360 button on the controller.
Right.
In the earliest conversations, people are like, oh, that costs a nickel for the button and we can't afford that.
Right.
Or whatever it was.
Right.
And we really felt strongly that was like the live button. That was the thing that tied you back to your community and tied you back to what was going on the service.
You've been vindicated once again. The good news
is. That was a big fight to get.
Yeah, that was a big. I want to talk, before I let you go, I want to talk about one of the most interesting games we've played on live. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I don't. I played a lot of interesting games on Live. I'm not sure which one.
A specific Halo session that you and I played together.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So let's talk about that.
So one of my one of the more interesting stories I have from working on Xbox Live was the time that we got to teach Bill Gates how to play
right
on Xbox and Xbox Live.
Right, because he wanted to understand it. I mean, clearly he's busy. He's not logging in every night. He's working on other things.
He really wanted to understand it, and so we put a whole bunch of work into getting it set up and making sure technically we could demo it in his office because right. there's a bunch of challenges with firewalls and
right.
all the corporate
right.
network policy stuff.
So you came to me and you said, I want you to help me out with this. I'm like, yeah, whatever you need. So you told me, I'm like, okay. My job was actually to sit in my office and play against Bill.
Yes.
And you were in front of him demoing.
I was there.
Right.
We had to start about 40 minutes late because we were having technical problems and we couldn't get the networking to work in his office.
Right.
And we started first with some PGR2.
I remember that.
And we raced a couple of times. And then we switched to Halo 2.
And do you remember what happened in that game?
In Halo 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do remember because I was
that's right.
right there with Bill as Bill was like having an experience a little different than I was expecting to share with him.
So explain it.
So when I set up the Halo 2 match, and we created the script and kind of rehearsed what we right. wanted to do, and you had a handful of people so that we could have like a real experience
right.
for them.
Right.
But when I did that, I forgot to make the match private.
So you're hosting the game, and you invited me.
Yeah, and you're Major in, Nelson. And there's like one or two other people that we had asked to be there.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the game starts filling up with other folks too. And I don't recognize their gamer tags.
And I was messaging over Live going, you left the game open, dude.
And they're like, cause we had told people, like, take it easy on Bill. Like,
right.
He's like, he hasn't played a lot of first person shooters. Bill plays like a lot of online bridge and games
right.
like that, but he
right.
hadn't really played a lot of first person shooters.
Right.
And, he was like trying to get oriented. You know, a lot of people when they first start playing those games, it takes them a while to adjust to the thumbsticks yeah. and all that.
We were playing Ivory Tower. Slayer and Ivory
right.
Tower.
You're right.
I remember this.
And the highlight was when somebody just kept killing him over and over again with like a shotgun right to the face type
right.
of thing.
Right.
And then they like stand over his body and do some of like the Halo 2 Halo rituals that
right.
sometimes
Enough
occur.
Said. And are you explaining to him at that point that that's an animation glitch?
He thought it was funny. He enjoyed it.
Okay.
He thought it was definitely funny.
And I remember this. I don't know if you remember this, but I remember we were talking. We're in the post-game lobby for one of the games. I think we played two. One of the games. And he actually was talking. So people were talking to Bill, and he was talking back to them. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and I don't think people really knew who they were talking to.
No, they didn't know. And no, we're not going to tell you what his gamer tag was or is.
Yeah, that was definitely a highlight of my Microsoft career, has been to teach Bill Gates how to play Halo.
God, that was funny. I'll never forget when all those people started coming in off my friends list. This is an original Xbox, and they just started coming in. It's filling up. I'm going, oh God, if those people only knew who they played with.
Yeah, it was. That made it a little more challenging demo, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, because he's and then I'm sure you've been able to go back and show him how it's evolved and.
Yeah, because when we went and we showed, it was actually that same demo that you were talking about. I remember presenting to Bill in the 360 planning process to help him understand how we were taking Live. We actually did that meeting, the demo of Halo 2, a couple months before this.
Right.
So he understood Xbox One. So that as we were trying to explain to him what we were doing with 360 and how it was different.
Yeah, he knew where we were
fully
coming from.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. That's oh boy, that was crazy. Anyway, all right. Well, I'm gonna let you probably wrap it up here since you need to get back to work and work on getting that friends list with more people.
I will get to my best engineers on that right away for you.
Did you hear that? Paul Bunyan is his gamer tag. Go ahead and send him a message.
So it's been an interesting 5 years. And when you look back, what's the one of the most significant things? I mean, we just talked about the Bill thing, but what is some of the most significant points for you in the Live birthday? Was it the launch of 360 where a lot of our Live vision came together?
Well,
besides when I hired you, which
right. besides that was a highlight,
significant
yeah.
milestones.
Please,
right. Besides the launching of Live, and there's obviously a handful of really important games that shipped that were big milestones.
Ghost Recon
along the way. Ghost Recon was
Rainbow,
huge.
Yeah.
All the Rainbow series. Return to Castle Wolfenstein was the first game in the spring after we launched, where we'd gone through a long, kind of dry period of content. So we're all really excited to play that. One other thing that stands out for me, which was nice from like a recognition perspective for the team, was when we won an Emmy
Yeah.
That was in the fall of 2004.
Right.
And they just started, this is like the technical arm of the Emmys. This isn't like the part that people see on TV.
Right. You're not best actor.
Yeah. I wasn't best actor. I didn't get to like rub elbows with all the rich and famous stars. But they just started an arm of it to try to recognize excellence in video gaming, since video games are connected to TVs.
Right.
And we brought a team of 8 people out in the fall to these awards, and we had people from Sony there and other people that received some awards.
Where the heck
as well.
Was I? I wasn't invited. I think it was at Tokyo. I think it was in Tokyo Game Show.
I think it was actually. Yeah, it was. I think you're right.
But yeah. So anyway, go ahead.
Actually, it was fall of 2005. Did I say fall of 2004? I meant fall of 2005. Okay. Right. So we were getting really close to shipping 360 at the time. Okay. So we brought like representatives of the team out,
right,
to this thing. And it was actually the first time Microsoft had ever won a technical Emmy before.
Oh, interesting.
So, like, my other Microsoft career highlight,
right,
besides teaching Bill Gates
on behalf
how to play
of the
Halo
company,
2, I got to accept the first Emmy on behalf of the company.
And I put pictures of that up on the blog when that happened, because that was a big deal.
It was really cool. It was really neat for the team, because remember when we came back, we did an all hands meeting for the team,
right,
and we let everybody have their picture taken
with
the Emmy,
which is heavy.
It's like a real Emmy. I mean, these are big things. They're not like cheap plastic,
right? This is the same thing like the Desperate Housewives have, and this is what the actors and actresses get.
Exactly, it's the exact same.
Okay.
And so that was definitely a highlight, because it was like recognition from industry.
Where's the Emmy now?
The Emmy is
where is it? I haven't seen it in a while.
It's been hiding in my office.
Okay, no, so it is.
We're actually building a new trophy case in the building to show off a lot of the different awards that we've won from different parts of the business.
Well, the Emmy has to be pretty much central to it.
It definitely is.
Yeah, because when I tell people, you know, that's what I love telling people is I work for the Emmy award-winning service. They're like, what? It went on what? Kind of catches them off guard. So that was cool. You brought a bunch of folks out there and they accepted it. And
yeah,
a lot of the people
all stood up on stage.
So actually, now that I think about it, a lot of the people that went had been here since launch.
Yeah, and well, we were very deliberate in terms of who we selected, because I could only bring 8 people total.
Right.
And we selected people from each of the different disciplines so they could represent the team.
Right.
And we selected people that had been here since launch that had a really big impact.
Right.
On the success of the service.
Yeah, it's. So so you can say the Emmy award-winning service.
Yeah, exactly.
That's that. It just kind of rolls off the tongue. Well, that's kind of cool. All right, Paul Bunyan, I'm going to let you go. So I'm sure some people are going to send you some friends requests.
You know, we said at the beginning of the show how it'd been 2 years since I'd been on
right.
on your show. But every Sunday night, like clockwork, the exact same thing happens to me. Where right after you post your podcast,
right.
I get a slew of like friends requests from people in the community.
Really?
And my theory is that every time you release a new podcast,
right.
that gets people to go back and listen to the old episodes.
That's exactly what happens. I need to dig up which one you were on. But yeah, we definitely did have you on a while ago. I'll have you on again because you're actually working on some cool stuff that I can't talk about.
Yeah, we got some really neat stuff in the works right now.
And so maybe a few months, maybe next year, I don't know, but maybe soon we'll have you back on and talk about you know where we're going and what's going on. Before I let you go, I have to ask you though. So you have a Wii?
I have a Wii.
And do you have a PS3?
I do.
And what are you playing anything on them?
No. I mean and only because, not because I'm just an Xbox only guy, but because I still believe that the bulk of the really great content and
right.
games is on Xbox right. 360.
Right.
There's one or two titles on each of those platforms that are kind of interesting and fun, for me at least as a gamer.
Right.
But when I look at the lineup of stuff we have to play on 360.
Well, before I even get there, I don't even need to right. go to the Wii or the PS3. Because Bunyan has a little bit of a problem called World of Warcraft.
Oh, you're not going to go there.
That's why my gamer score is higher than you, because you're playing WoW.
I went back and I started playing WoW in like the spring when Burning Crusade came out.
Right.
And I don't play that much.
Right.
I'm not like a total WoW addict. I haven't even hit 70 yet. I started a new character when it came in March, and
right.
I'm knocking on the door to 70. But I play like 1 or 2 nights a week, and that right. sometimes interferes with my console time. Yeah.
We need to get a good. Massive role-playing game on 360.
We do.
We do.
I can't argue with that.
All right, I'm going to let you go. So I will. We'll play some COD4 this week. And happy birthday to live.
Thank you, Larry.
Bye.